We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Dan Gable said, the first period is won by the best technician. The second period is won by the kid in the best shape. The third period is won by the kid with the biggest heart. So here today we have the technician, Chris Romanchik, soon to be jiu-jitsu black belt. Myself, Lex Friedman, I'll take the conditioning. And we got Charlie Neely, a lifelong wrestler and grappler, fellow jiu-jitsu purple belt, and the kid with the biggest heart. So, is everyone happy, by the way, with that breakdown?
Yeah, that works. Sooner or later, you guys are going to pronounce my last name right, but I'm
What the fuck is your...
It's Romanchik, but Romanchik? That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. Romanchik?
There we go. Better.
Like romantic?
Kind of like that.
But with chick.
Right.
All right, so today let's talk a little about wrestling and a little about the long and storied Romanchik career in jiu-jitsu. Did I fuck it up again?
No, that was good. That was good.
All right.
Just like practice, you know? Yeah. No. You do it 10,000 times, you'll expertise. That's how it works, right?
That's right. He's the technician.
Yeah.
All right, so first, wrestling. Wrestling is back in the Olympics, to the chagrin of Josh Vogel, the big squash supporter.
Poor Josh. I'll never live that one down.
Never. He doesn't even know what squash is. None of us know what squash is, still.
That's a thing with paddles, right? That they play in England, maybe?
England.
Or is that cricket? No.
No, you're thinking of cricket. I don't even know the difference between racquetball and squash and small.
Totally, animal. Totally different. Other completely irrelevant small sport. Sorry for cricket, squash, or other irrelevant sport people I may have offended.
So there's an article called The Losses of Dan Gable by Wright Thompson that I recommend people read. It's probably one of the best things on Gable that I've read. It's in ESPN magazine. If you guys don't mind, let me read something from it.
Sure.
This is the only time I'll read something. It's the opener of the article, and it talks about when Gable first learned of the IOC decision to ban wrestling from the Olympics, which was back in February, I think. It reads, on the morning the IOC announced it would drop wrestling from the Olympics, Dan Gable was a continent away, fast asleep. It was dark outside. His wife, Kathy, sat at the computer waiting on the coffee maker to start. She scrolled through the Iowa wrestling message boards, and one thread caught her attention. When she finished reading, she hurried to the bedroom. Dan was on the left side of the bed on his stomach. That sticks in her mind for some reason. Him peaceful, unaware. She tapped him, asked if he knew anything about the Olympics getting rid of wrestling in 2020. He mumbled something and kept sleeping. For a few moments until the information traveled through his subconscious and he rushed to the computer. The news rearranged his world. Sitting by himself in the dark, Gable struggled not to cry. He called the head of the USA Wrestling and blurted, "Tell me it isn't true." So, Gable crying is an interesting image. Charlie, how did you react when you first found out that wrestling is out of the Olympics?
I'm trying to remember when I first heard about it. I probably read about it online.
Facebook?
Might have been. I don't really remember. You know, it was obviously very shocking. You know, I mean, wrestling is, you know, one of the first sports. And going back to the ancient Olympic Games. So, you know, how could they be taking it out of the Olympic Games? It did not compute.
Did you look at the other sports that they're... Sort of the automatic tendency is to look at the other sports as being compared to, right?
Yeah, and I think early on there was mention of the modern pentathlon.
Yeah, which I actually don't know what that is.
I'm not exactly sure either.
I'm pretty sure people on like four continents don't know exactly what that is.
So I don't think
we're alone in this. I think there was something like four countries that competed in it the last time through.
But right away... I heard about modern pentathlon and how the grandson, maybe, of the former IOC, Prez, was heavily involved in this modern pentathlon. And so right away, I read about this kind of political thing that was going on. But, yeah, it was shocking and, you know, upsetting. And it was just hard to fathom why they
was
were,
it
they
a big deal
this.
For you? I mean, you've wrestled
yeah,
for
I mean,
a long time.
Sure.
How important is the Olympics for an American wrestler?
Well, I think it's, you know, when you first get into the sport and you start learning about wrestling, you start hearing the names of Dan Gable and John Smith and Cale Sanderson and now Jordan Burroughs and so many past world and Olympic champions. And so the Olympics is the pinnacle of the sport.
We also have the NCAAs. Wrestling in college in America, at least, is a big system, mm-hmm. big competitive system. So at least we have that to, like, young people have that to look forward to.
Sure. But I think when you are a young kid and you're
dream big,
getting into wrestling and you're, you know, aspiring to be the best, then, you know, you're looking to the Olympics. I mean, I remember, you know, when I was getting into wrestling in high school, you know, I didn't know how good I could be. And, I was inspired by watching Randy Lewis in the 1984 Olympics, John Smith and Kenny Monday in the 1988 Olympics. And, these are the guys that I looked up to. You know, I tried to learn watching their videos. You know, I would try to pick up techniques from them, and you know, I would
VHS
watch
tapes.
Absolutely,
what was it, 80s?
Absolutely, yeah,
yeah. Ah, the good old days. Well, what do you think? One of the things they did, spoiler alert, wrestling was led back into the Olympics in September, but in that process of 6-7 months, Phila put together a lot of changes or pushed through a lot of changes to the rules, which is really interesting. I think it's, I get a lot of shit done when there's a deadline, and I think that's what really motivated Phila to get shit done with this kind of pressure on them. And they got through a lot of rules that I think a lot of the wrestling community likes. And I think jiu-jitsu can also learn from some of these rule changes. In case people don't know, some of the things are, there's now two periods, each 3 minutes, and the score is cumulative. It used to be that, how would you say that? It's like a best of three format. You have three periods. And
yeah, it was 3 2-minute periods, and if you won the first two periods, you won the match. So they did away with, now it's cumulative scoring again, as it was in the past.
So it like encourages you to score early and score big because those points are going to carry through the whole match. It's not like you're trying to just outscore in every single period. It's good to score no matter when you score.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it evens things out too, because I mean, in the past with the way that everything was set up with the old like reach in the beanbag system, for those of you guys who aren't familiar with the infamous ball grab, if you would, the way that things were decided, if you know, at the end of a period it was a tie, you know, one of the wrestlers would reach into a bag and they would draw a card, and it would basically, like, not unlike that weird kind of shitty movie Red Belt, pick some sort of disadvantage, and there'd be one guy starting basically with a single leg already.
Mm-hmm.
And, he would just win the round by either taking the guy down or running him straight out of bounds. And that's how a ton of matches were decided. And I couldn't imagine, like, competing on that level and, you know, working my ass off to get to that point, put together, you know, an incredible match against somebody else who's, you know, a world-class competitor, and everything come down to, like, which one of us draws a single leg pebble, you know? It was basically absurd to watch.
Yep.
For a while.
Agreed. And
the name ball grab is just beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was actually, so you have one wrestler is blue and one wrestler is red, and right, if it's a tie score at the end of regulation, you, rather than have an overtime period, you would, I guess it was a coin flip. I forget now who got to go to the bag and pick out a ball, but you know, it's a bag full of boxes of red and blue balls, and there's an even number of red and blue balls.
So essentially a ball sack is what you're saying.
Yeah, a ball sack.
Yes.
And thank God that they got rid of this stupid rule, but
because wrestling isn't gay enough with the singlets and half naked old dudes grappling together, there needs to be a ball sack.
Good job tying that together, Lance.
Thank you. But, you know, that's the kind of – it's hard to escape that kind of sexual innuendo whenever you're talking about a ball grab. There's also the cool thing, which I'm a huge fan of, is the shot clock, which there's like a – whenever one wrestler is deemed to be stalling – or not being aggressive enough, he gets 30 seconds. He's put on a shot clock and he gets 30 seconds to score a takedown or score anything. If he scores a push out, does that count? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, so score anything. And they changed the, which is cool. I think jiu-jitsu should, you know, jiu-jitsu is really struggling with how to encourage takedowns. Like how to give value to takedowns and discourage guard pulling while also not discouraging it too much, because that's really the beauty and the essence of jiu-jitsu is the guard. So there's that, you know, ADCC is struggling with that, you know, like they, I think, is it in the finals matches that in the first?
It's after no, the.
After 10 minutes?
Yeah, it's as soon as points go into play. As soon as points go into play, it's a negative one for a guard pull.
But if you want to stall, then you can't stall. So what happens is you walk around on your feet for the, you know, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, and it's not very exciting. There's no like incentive to go for the shot, because what happens if you fail on the shot and the guy sprawls, then you're in a world of trouble. They don't stand you back up to your feet if you're like in this, you know, what is that position? Like a turtle position where you're like reaching out and holding onto their legs. So then it restarts you. So it's just the system, the rule system is not such that you're encouraged to go in for the big shots or for the big throws, you know.
ADCC has done an interesting job of that. I mean, every tournament runs into issues with it because, I mean, to be frank, I've been around a long time and I'm yet to find a perfect rule structure. There really isn't, like, I mean, you could look at it from the standpoint of rewarding position before submission or, you know, encourage someone to stay active by, you know, encouraging submission attempts. But it, realistically, like, once you put that into like a real world application, it's far from perfect.
Yeah, but there's got to be better rules. Like imagine in that situation that, you know, they're both walking around on their feet. You watch heavyweight matches in jiu-jitsu. If they were given this penalty, 30 second clock to score a takedown in jiu-jitsu.
Oh, I think that would be huge. Whether it's scoring a takedown or engaging in some fashion, right? So, I mean, whether it's at least attacking, like attempting. Right, exactly. It's either attempting a takedown or moving towards a guard pull or something. I think something like that would be huge. Again, the problem is, like, especially when you take into account like just the implementation. It's one thing when you talk about like an IBJJF tournament where, you know, you do have the people there that are do that. You do have like, you know, like an extra person who could be sitting there with a clock, like timing these things and like weighing them out, right? I never want that job. That sounds like the most miserable job in the world. But I mean, it is a possible thing. The problem is the majority of tournaments that folks compete in, like whether we're talking about like Grappler's Quest, Naga, or US Grappling, for an example, I mean, they all have like their ups and downs, and like a lot of those, they do put on good shows. And with that, the problem is like you don't have the resources necessarily available to, you know, to reinforce something like that, which is one of the reasons why I like, again, like as an alternative in terms of like different scoring systems, different things that are available. I like the move that U.S. Grappling has made with, like, you know, turning most of their tournaments, or at least a large portion of them, into, you know, the no time limit option where everything is going to be submission only. Yeah, exactly.
I'm doing that next weekend.
Oh, that's fantastic.
mostly for the shirt, because the shirt has,
it's like a really
awesome
sweet
gorilla
shirt. Yeah. Like, it has a...
I'm also a little curious. I did it once before a year and a half ago, and all my matches were just 2 or 3 minutes long. I was fortunate enough to get like submissions quickly, but I was always curious what happens to me if I have to do an hour and a half long match. Like if I can, it feels like hell.
Oh, dude, it's got to be like horrendous at that point.
I wonder if I'll just tap out of just exhaustion or not.
It's funny how those go. I've reffed actually quite a few different submission only events for U.S. Grappling, and like your experience pretty much says it. I mean, the majority of the matches are fast, you know. Yeah, I mean, everybody kind of walks in with a different strategy, whether it's like, I'm going to, you know, tire this person out or not care about position or whatever the case and just look to finish. Or I'm just going to finish this person as fast as I possibly can, which is realistically the smartest thing you can do, because that way you get a chance to rest before your next match. Because I mean, if you've got a 40 minute long marathon and then like, oh shit, the next match was, was a minute and a half and you're immediately right back out there again, you're at a little bit of a competitive disadvantage. Right. But it's pretty crazy when you see, like, when you see those matches. I mean, I've had a couple, just different tournaments, different rule formats over the years, like matches that have gone 15 to, I think maybe 25 minutes was the longest match that I've had. And it gets interesting because part of it's like a will of attrition, you know? Right. I think like there's that part of you that's just like when you're on the mat at that point where I'm not giving up, like to hell with this. Like I'm not giving this guy the benefit of the doubt. And immediately, like while you're there, you're playing like that Rocky montage runs through the back of your head and it's like, yeah, all right, I'm good for like another 10 minutes.
See, but there's a, I watched Wilson Hayes won against Billy Algio recently, maybe half a year ago. And they went for over an hour at a Grapples Quest event. And they did what very few people I've seen do, which is they went hard the whole time. Not hard, but it was like nobody can go hard for an hour and over an hour, right? But it's like they kept moving. They kept going for stuff. They kept trying stuff. And I feel like the rule structure of unlimited time, submission only, incentivizes you to just like rest for like 20 minutes every once in a while. Just like sit in half guard or something like that.
Again, still like from like a philosophy standpoint, or at least I think in terms of like how to look at a match like that, if somebody's going to rest for 20 minutes and I can't pass their guard while they're trying to rest.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's like.
It just makes it running a tournament so hard. And it's also actually difficult to watch. It's nice to read about in a blog post later.
Right.
But watching it for 20 minutes, the philosophical beauty of the moment fades quickly.
That's just it. Like you get those that are incredible matches. It's like, yes, that is the spirit of what this is supposed to be. And then there's others where it's like, oh shit, that's a giant dude laying on top of a not so giant dude. This is going to go on for forever.
I think I saw that Bill Algio fight and it was, you know, when, how long did it last? An hour?
I think an hour, 10 minutes, hour, 20 minutes.
Okay. But I mean, it was actually fun to watch because, you know, neither one wanted to concede, you know? So, I mean, the will and the heart was evident in both guys, you know?
I think that's like a testament to both of those guys. I mean, anybody who's ever like, you know, had a chance to train or compete with any of them or watch them, like, I mean, they don't ever have dull matches, you know, win, lose, or draw. Like Wilson's always going to be tough any division that he takes on, you know, and it's because like there is no stop. There is no quit in him, you know, and Bill, like I remember Bill, like when he was, you know, first a white belt coming up, like he was like the toughest white belt in the world. And then he was like the toughest blue belt in the world. And it's like, there is no quit switch for him, you know, yeah. Like there isn't like a spot where it's like, I'm just going to be lazy and it's okay if I lose this now. Like, no, I mean, a match with Bill, like, doesn't matter if it's like a 5 minute time match or like you're just going, like, you're definitely not getting a chance to rest much in that one.
Yeah, he goes crazy. But just for the record, I hate Bill Algio. You hear that, Bill? I hate you. Good luck. He has a fight actually coming up next weekend.
Are you insinuating that he's not perfect? Is that what the
he is perfect, but.
Nice. I'm calling him out. Somehow encouraging a Bill Algio podcast. Is that what's going to go on next?
I'm not. He's been trying to get on, but I don't want to make that happen. Maybe when he gets his black belt,
this could be incredible. It'd be like an Ultimate Warrior interview.
Yeah, he's a funny dude. So some of the other rules, going back to wrestling a little bit. So the takedown gets 2 points now,
right? And whereas it was one point forever, and now it's 2 points. So. The Americans like that because you know, the Americans tend to be very active on the feet and be well conditioned. So, you know, I think before these rule changes, what we saw is a lot of protecting your lead. And so, like I just think of the Russians; they were so good under these. I mean, they're good, period, but. Under the old rules, they seem to be really effective at just kind of biding their time until there were 30 seconds left in the period, and then they would, you know, seemingly score at will, whether it's a takedown or a push out or something, and then they would protect that lead. You know, the Americans would go crazy trying to attack to try to even the score, or, you know. Better the score.
Yeah, and so the shot clock definitely helps that, right? So Barros has been undefeated for a long time, and people are trying to figure out how to stop him. And obviously, one of the ways you could probably try to stop him is, so assuming you can't you can't outscore him in terms of takedowns. It has to be strategy somehow, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the shot clock makes it very difficult because whatever strategy you try to use is going to probably involve some stalling.
Right.
And it's rough. I mean, he's such an active guy, like, as it is. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there's no boring Jordan Burroughs match. Like, any time that you ever watch a Jordan Burroughs match, it's like, holy shit, he just blast doubled the guy, like, out of nowhere again. And it's like, you know, 12 points on the board, you know, in like the first minute and a half. Like, it's not a match where stalling is going to come into account. And I think, like, also the changes in the takedown rule has like a big effect there too. It's 2 points for a takedown, you know? So someone like him who's going to get in on that, you know, that blast double, you know, that outside single real fast, like, it's awesome. I mean, that encourages that game.
Mm-hmm.
One of the more controversial ones is what used to be, I think, earlier in the year, a 10-point tech fall is now a 7-point tech fall, right?
I think that's right, yeah.
I think they proposed 10 points initially.
Is it 6 or 7? 7?
Anyway, the point is the number of points is low, relatively. So within 3 minutes, if you get the 7-0 lead, a 7-point lead, you automatically win the match. And all it takes is a takedown and...
A turn, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exposure.
So I'm like a collegiate guy. Like I'm just recently started watching Olympic wrestling. Hmm. I've always just been a fan of NCAA, and that turn idea has been always weird to me.
Right. So
what is the idea of this? So what is, first of all, what is it?
Okay. So in international, so there are two styles of international wrestling, right? We have freestyle and Greco-Roman. And in both styles, to get back points or exposure points, you have to you have to break the 90-degree plane. In other words, you have to turn, you know, you're on top. You have to turn the bottom guy such that he is – his back in relation to the mat is more than perpendicular.
Right.
You get exposure points for that. That is different from NCAA, you know, collegiate, high school wrestling, where you actually have to demonstrate more control and not just, you know, get a quick roll through or whatever. You actually have to hold the guy on his back for, you know, anywhere from 2 to 5 seconds to score.
So you actually have to show control. That's the weird mm-hmm. look of it with freestyle wrestling, is you can get that turn with seemingly very little control or very little show of dominance. It just looks like a quick turn and you get a lot of points. That never made sense. Why is it so many points, do you think, that you get? You get 2 points for the turn.
It's not easy.
It's not easy to do. I know.
No, I mean, I look at the Americans
because they make it look easy. Some of them,
you know, I think some of these countries, like Russia in particular, they're really good at turning guys. The Americans are terrible at turning internationally. The Americans score their points mostly on takedowns. They get a chance to work on top. It's just very hard to turn these guys, you know, who are growing up wrestling freestyle and Greco-Roman. They're just very savvy on the mat. They know how to keep their hips square to the mat and not give up those exposure points.
I think it's interesting seeing some of that stuff too, especially when you watch, like the Quentin Wright match from, what was that, like a month ago or so?
Yeah, Ben Askren and Quentin Wright.
Yeah, I mean, Quentin Wright's an absolute monster on the feet. I mean, he's national champion. Dude is awesome. And then he gets a match with sort of freestyle rules, I guess is the best way we can explain what they were doing for that one.
Mm-hmm. It was some kind of, you know, modified freestyle.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool setup, by the way.
Yeah, they were giving points for turns.
If you guys aren't familiar with it, and you know, those of you guys who don't necessarily follow wrestling really closely, number one, you should get a subscription to flowwrestling.com because it's awesome. Everything from an instructional standpoint to, you know, following what's going on in matches, understanding a little bit better, like some of the things that, you know, Charlie's talking about, but also in terms of watching some of the events, like they've taken a pretty similar stance to what Halleck Gracie has done with the whole Metamoris thing, and they've applied that same thing to wrestling, and they've only done one event so far, but it was fantastic. They had Daniel Cormier doing the commentary for a lot of it, and he's the man on the microphone.
So the idea of it was former wrestler that gone to MMA facing current top level wrestlers.
Yeah, for this first one. That's not the case for the second one.
Yeah, I mean, that was just like a basic idea.
The second one, I don't think they are MMA guys who were former wrestlers. I think it's all wrestlers.
All wrestlers.
Yeah.
And at this point, there's a few big names that are sort of interesting to watch that people already know enough thanks to like Twitter and Facebook, and, like Kyle Dake and all of them, that people would love to see just the wrestlers. That whole weight class of Dake, Burrows, David Taylor.
Taylor, as soon as he's graduated, and
Andrew Howes. Yeah, so just to, I guess, to explain that. So right now, there are seven weight classes in
freestyle
and seven in Greco.
For men.
And then there's a women's freestyle too. And I think the way it's been is there have been four weight classes for the women freestylers in the Olympics, but seven if it's the world championships. But in any case, I think they're cutting it down to six for men, six men's freestyle, six Greco, and then six for women.
This is an interesting thing. People are complaining because it used to be, I think it used to be 10 weight classes.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. So somehow people are saying that 10 weight classes is way better. Why is that necessarily better? Like, as a from a spectator perspective, like, six weight classes are pretty nice breakdown. I think, well, what do we get in jiu-jitsu? Actually, in jiu-jitsu, it might be like eight. Yeah.
That sounds right.
I don't know. From a spectator point of view, you may be right. From a wrestling standpoint, you know, we want more opportunities, not fewer opportunities. It's now in this case they're adding a couple weight classes for the women in the Olympics, which is, you know, definitely a good thing. But they're cutting back on the
Let's talk about women, Charlie.
Before we do that, we were talking about Kyle Dake and David Taylor and Jordan Burrow. So yeah. I just wanted to say that we really like four of our top freestyle wrestlers are all in the same weight class. I think that's what we were getting at. So Jordan Burrows is currently 65-0 in senior level international competition, or just senior level competition. He's beaten some Americans as well. But so he's a world and two-time world champion. He's an Olympic champion, and he is he's got his sights set on John Smith's record of six world and Olympic titles. So he's the man right now.
He could be one of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
He's got the makings for it, like, no doubt.
He's at 163 pounds, which I think is 74 kilo. And behind him is Kyle Dake, who is he's the only guy to win four NCAA Division I titles at four different weight classes. So he did lose a couple times in college, but no one's ever done that feat. Behind Kyle Dake is David Taylor, who is, a senior at Penn State, and he is a NCAA champ. He's a three-time finalist.
Yeah.
He's lost twice because he lost to Bubba Jenkins, and then he lost to, Kyle Dake, but he's a three-time NCAA finalist. He's a one-time champ. He's, you know, looking to get his second NCAA title.
I think his accomplishments don't completely tell the story of how
he's
amazing
phenomenal.
He is.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. But he's just a little bit behind Dake. So you got Burrows, Dake, Taylor, and Andrew Howe is a guy who has taken a couple of redshirt years. He took a normal red shirt. He took an Olympic red shirt. He might have even taken a medical red shirt.
So what's to interrupt you real quick? What are the rules on the red shirts thing? So red shirt is when you take a year off from competition in your
right
in wrestling. I thought you're allowed 1 year as a red shirt for whatever the hell reason, and then 1 year for Olympic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't familiar.
What are the rules? Do you know how many years? Because I feel like Andrew Howe was in graduate school. I think that was said somewhere. Like, are you allowed to be in grad school? Can you graduate? Can you be like 33 and still be in college?
I think so. Yeah. I'm not all that clear on the letter of the law, but yeah, you can take, basically it's a 5-year plan. When you're that good and you're going to a D1 school, yeah, you're going to be on the team for 5 years. And one of those years is going to be a redshirt year where you're not really allowed to compete for your and represent your team.
Right.
So it's an extra year for growth and development. But there is also, in addition to that redshirt year, there is an Olympic red shirt. So if you're in college, when there's an Olympic Games coming up, you can apply to take an Olympic red shirt year. I don't know what the criteria are for that, but, you know, in Andrew Howe's case, he did both. He took a regular red shirt and he took an Olympic red shirt.
Is he wrestled for Oklahoma?
So he's on a 6-year plan. Yeah. He's moved around a bit. He started out, I think, at Wisconsin and, now he's with, Oklahoma.
Yeah. He got hurt in, where'd he get hurt? He got hurt pretty bad, right?
Wrestling Burroughs.
Was it Burroughs?
In the World Team Trials last year.
Yeah.
He hurt his knee, I think it was, so he was out for a bit.
Yeah, tore his ACL, right?
Okay.
In the finals of the trials.
But Andrew, before Dake and Taylor came along, Andrew Howe was Jordan Burroughs' main competition in this country, and they had some real barn burners, and Burroughs won. You know, in the end, but Howe has given them some really good matches. So you've got, and meanwhile, Dake and Taylor have both beaten Howe recently in freestyle. So you've got these four guys who are, you know, just really, really good. And unfortunately, they're for the U.S. are all in the same weight class.
Are they going to move around? What's the, how do you solve the situation?
I don't know, because they're, you know, they're moving to 6 weight classes from 7 in freestyle. So, you know, I think
there's, what is the jump?
Like a 22-pound jump.
It's something crazy, right?
Yeah. So, and I don't see. I mean, I can see maybe Hal bumping up because he's just a little heavier.
Right?
I think he's a little heavier. He's just thicker and.
But that's going from what is it? 166, I think.
163 is where it is now.
Okay.
And I think the new weight class, I think I saw the new weight is going to be like 165, but add 22 pounds to that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's, who's gonna that's go, crazy. Who's gonna go up? I mean, that's a monstrous jump up to 187 pounds.
None of them can go down 22 pounds.
No, I mean, they're giant dudes as it is at 165 pounds. It's ridiculous.
The last thing that I'm aware of is they are separating the top 2 wrestlers. They were trying to do 4 wrestlers in a bracket, which I don't understand why they didn't do it before. Much more, but they're looking at the ranking and they're making sure that they don't, in a tournament, the top 2 wrestlers don't meet before the finals.
Mm-hmm. In jiu-jitsu, you don't see that.
It's almost never seeded. I mean, I don't remember the last time that I actually saw like a seeded jiu-jitsu tournament anywhere.
It's kind of manually seeded. I think the black belt brackets, I still don't actually understand this process. It seems kind of shady, but it seems like the big coaches meet together and they adjust the brackets to make sure that like, they meet with IBJJF to make sure that the gold and silver medalists from like last year don't meet until later.
Okay.
So it's just obvious kinds of things. But the ranking, I mean, if you look at, we can all, when we sit down and look at a list of names, can kind of rank them based on our own kind of common sense, at least approximately. And that's what they're doing, but there's no official ranking.
I think the bigger issue with that stuff, especially when it comes down to like IBJJF tournaments, and I think they do a great job from an organizational standpoint, but you've got, you know, your European championships and your Pan American championships and your world championships, but you don't have any goddamn qualifiers. So it's like to say that one of those tournaments is more prestigious than the other, I mean, the only way that you could really weigh that is on the basis of what's the turnout for your, you know, what's the turnout for your division? Like, what do those break down to? So, to me, the thing that's really strange about it is that you have a world championships that's still an open tournament, right? Like,
right.
I mean, imagine, like, if that happened with wrestling, right? Wrestling, one of the most popular sports throughout the world. I mean, we basically have, what, like, wrestling and running, I guess, that would fit into that category, right? I guess judo's made its way into that direction, but there's soccer, you know? Mm-hmm. But imagine if it was just, like, an open tournament, right? So, like, Charlie, like your club soccer team from, you know, over here in West Philly would be able to enter into the World Cup. That'd be pretty goddamn crazy, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. And the thing that I don't get is why the IB, I mean, I understand why they haven't done it. And the ultimate answer is because it makes a shitload of money. That, but
I don't agree with you, but go on. I'll explain why. I'll argue this point. Do you want me to? Okay. I think they do want to make money, but I think they also realize that this is a huge, an awesome way to grow the sport. So I've competed at Worlds, and when you compete in the blue belt division of the World Championships, there's something happens to the human psyche where you ignore the fact that you're a blue belt. You think this is the World Championship. for this. You really believe that you are going to be the world champion if you win that division. And what that results is it really raises the level of training. It's like working to be the state champion when you're in high school, or working to be the NCAA champion when you're in college. If you walk up to those guys and say, "I'm sorry, but your accomplishments are stupid," Olympic gold medalist will whoop your ass any day. There's something about like providing those little sub. I don't know. It just seems to work.
Oh, I don't disagree. Like, so I think that's huge to be able to have something like that.
It's great for money, but I don't know if it's just about the money. It seems to work for growing the sport. So it's like for money in the long term.
which I think is big, right? Because I think, like, ultimately, I mean, all things Gracie, like, if you really take it back, the idea was, you know, grow the sport as much as possible, grow the art, grow the self-defense side, but also, you know, with the kind of comes of sport, because that's what we all end up getting addicted to.
Right.
But as far as, like, to break that down, and, you know, like, Lex's breakdown's pretty good. But the thing is, like, even if you look at from a high school standpoint, you know, qualifiers for a state tournament, well, you better win your districts, you know, then you better win your regionals, you know, because if you're not placing in districts or regionals, then you have no way of passing on, right? When you take a look at, like, NCAAs, you know, you still have to qualify for the tournament, you know? I mean, it becomes the same thing. Like, if you're the, you know, the back-and-forth second guy at your weight, you know, at, you know, 99.9% of colleges, you're probably not getting invited to the tournament,
right?
You know, and that's ultimately what it breaks down to. And the thing is, like, it's not to fault the IBJJF. I think, like, what they're doing is incredible. I think, like, the expansion and what you see in tournaments now, you know, compared to what they were 10 years ago, it's huge. I mean, hell, the Worlds are here in the States now. It's not like people have to fly down to Rio for it. The thing I think that kind of catches it up a little bit is that, like, instead of it being like, you know, your Pan Ams are your qualifiers, right? Your Europeans are your qualifiers. You know, your Brasileiro, like, that's your qualifier. Like, if that's the case, then your Worlds are really your Worlds, you know? And it's, like, again, not necessarily a bad thing, except when you look at just, like, the sheer numbers and the open nature of it. And in terms of, like, being able to encourage people, man, like, I think there should be, you know, everything from blue through black belt divisions, you know? I think that it's huge to have that stuff. And I have more respect for a lot of people in terms of what they've done to win, like, at blue and purple belt, especially blue belt, because for years, man, like, you'd have, you know, 8, 9, 10 matches sometimes, you know, 7 matches, something crazy like that in a bracket. And, like, I don't know how many of you guys have had more than 7 or 8 matches in a day, but it's one of the most exhausting things you'll ever do. And, you know, to still be able to perform and still be able to finish well at the end, I think that, you know, is as hard to do as almost anything in the sport.
Yeah, it's a huge accomplishment, yeah, for sure.
But I think the qualifiers would be a good thing. So
yeah, so that there's only, you know, if there was a way to create a legitimate ranking system, then it'd be nice if the qualifier, like most, like judo or wrestling, only accept, like judo accepts the top 22 in the world. So the brackets are pretty small. Because it only has the best guys. Mm-hmm.
So hopefully when Carlos Gracie's listening to this podcast, you know, he takes some notes on it and it's like, wow, that makes perfect sense. So we'll just use all the other IBJJF tournaments as qualifiers.
Well, I think it's moving that way. They're you know, they're innovating constantly.
One interesting thing is regarding seeding. You know, the NCAA tournament is seeded. It's the top 12 guys maybe in the weight are separated. But in the Olympics, they don't seed, and I don't completely understand it, but they have a couple of pools. And, as far as I know, you can be an Olympic champ and you can from, you know, 2012, and then you can draw the, you know, the world champ from 2013 in the first round. They don't separate you.
Right.
And it's a single elimination tournament. So you lose your out unless the guy who beats you makes it to the final, and then you're brought into the what they call the repechage.
But they so right, it, and it does seem like you watch NCAAs, and it actually, statistically speaking, it does usually end up the number one ranked guy wins, the number two ranked guy gets second. So like the rankings work. I mean, it's all over the place, but like just on average, the higher your ranking, the better you end up doing.
Yeah, so and there, you know, but there are always upsets and you know, underdogs making the finals and that kind of things. And that's what makes it interesting.
So you grew up in the area?
Yes.
Okay, so where did you grow up?
I grew
where
up.
Where were you born?
I grew up in a small town called Sawyersville, and it's just across the river from Wilkes-Barre. It's a tiny little dot on the map. There's probably like 6,000 people that live there.
Wrestler Dave, a mutual friend of ours, gave me a little insight. He went to school with you, I guess, in high school?
Yeah, Dave and I have been best friends since probably elementary school or middle school or something like that. We've been friends for forever. And Dave was a great wrestler through high school.
Yeah, he said you hung with a different crowd a little bit, like with a I was a little drunk, so I don't remember exactly, but I think like hippie musician crowd, is that closer to the...
Actually, yeah, pretty much spot on. So after I blew up my knee playing football and broke an ankle wrestling, it was like, well, I want to do something else for a while.
So you wrestled junior high school or...
I wrestled briefly in high school and it wasn't even a full season. Like it sucked. The football season, I tore the meniscus in my left knee and being kind of like bullheaded, it's like, all right, well, I'm going to kind of try to keep going through this thing, right? You know, so my knee felt good enough, so to speak. Don't remember how or what happened that initially broke the ankle, but I remember practicing with it one day. Oh, God bless the Wyoming Valley. Just being told, you know, tape it up. You're fine. Just tape it up. You're fine. Eventually, it swelled up to the size of like super grapefruit, and that was kind of the extent of that.
So why did you join the wrestling team? Was there a friend like Dave?
Well, I had a bunch of friends who were wrestlers. You know, I grew up with friends who grew up with wrestling. You know, I mean, it's different. Like, and it's so funny. Like, different parts like of the country when you get a chance to travel. Like, different sports are big in certain areas. You know, like here around Philadelphia, lacrosse is really big. We never had a lacrosse team.
Wait, what? Really?
Yeah, yeah. Welcome, Lex.
Really? Is
yeah.
this true?
Yeah, this Charlie, is completely
true. Are
you
aware of this? Lacrosse?
I can tell you lacrosse is getting big at my school.
You know, and other sports that, you know, just different, you know, throughout the country. Well, the thing in Pennsylvania when you grow up kind of in a small town in the middle of nowhere is wrestling. So
it's probably the top, like if you look at the sheer numbers of high level high school wrestlers, it's probably Pennsylvania, like is the number one. Like I was surprised because I was looking at this. I was surprised to find that. I thought it would be Oklahoma or Iowa. But usually those trail pen.
Yeah, PA is tops right now. Yeah. And if you look at the All-Americans in the NCAA Division I tournament and those wrestlers' hometowns, Pennsylvania is in first place there.
You get a whole bunch of different areas where it's just really, really big here. And I mean, depending back and forth, New Jersey also fields really, really well. But I mean, Pennsylvania, whether it's out towards Pittsburgh – you know, or it's Lehigh, Wyoming Valley area, or it's out around Harrisburg. I mean, that's just, it's what you grow up with. It's just like the normal progression. Some kids grow up playing soccer. Some kids, you know, get started early at the YMCA wrestling. And that's just the way that it goes in PA.
So you broke your ankle in wrestling.
Yes, to bring this back around.
And then you became a pothead and a musician. I'm assuming the pothead part, but go on.
Man, this is a terrible stereotype. Like, this is just awful.
All right, just a musician.
Assume we'll that I'm like assume. An illicit drug user and all sorts of crazy things. So,
meanwhile, you never drink and you're a vegetarian. Vegan.
Yes. Yes. I'm,
you're the perfect human being.
I feel
right,
like
go on.
Anyway, so following that, yeah, I mean, sports were pretty much out because I was broken and banged up. You know, the end result was, you know, not doing anything physical. So I put on a ton of weight. I think I was like 230 pounds at one point, which is crazy. Cause I mean, now I feel like I'm really heavy and I'm over 190 pounds and it feels really, really weird. Like any time that I was competing in jiu-jitsu, it was, you know, 165 to 175 pounds. So it was like, you know, totally different. But anyway, so my job in high school and then after high school for a while, I was working at a pizza shop and weird, crazy, like this actually plays into this, right?
Yeah.
So as it worked out, the owners of the pizza shop, follow me here, their brother was married to Hoyce's sister-in-law. So through that, like, you know, anytime that like there'd be like Hoyce would randomly pop into the pizza shop, which is a weird thing to see, especially growing up watching like the early UFCs. As it worked out, one of the times coming through, there was a mention to, you know, one of my coworkers, still a good friend of mine, Dan Salvatera's name is. He mentioned like, hey, there's a Gracie affiliate school up in Scranton, up above Scranton. After you know, a week or two, he convinced me to go and, you know, get my ass basically back in shape. And it wasn't in Scranton. Scranton was the metropolis of Northeast Philadelphia. It was basically up in the hills above Scranton. And like, it was crazy because, I mean, classes, we had one purple belt running classes every now and again, Steve Brunetti, Dr. Steve Brunetti. And his brother Mark, who was a blue belt at the time, was basically my first instructor. And like, it's funny because you go back to like, you know, 2002, 2003, 2004, whatever it was there, you would still get like people coming in seeing like the Gracie Challenge kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Dresser Dave said that there was a point at which you were ripped, like as a purple belt or something like that. I don't know how he knows this, but we were all wondering if there's a point where you had like that, like the 12-pack physique. And he said there might have been something close to that.
I don't know about 12-pack physique. I was in pretty good shape for a while. It took me a while to get my blue belt. So that was like, because the downside of the Hoist affiliate schools is, you know, like Hoist is around like once a year, you know, and if you're not able to get there for it, then it's like, okay, well, you're getting passed up till next year for your blue belt. And it's just the way it was. Like, you didn't question it. Like, you didn't ask, you know, it was just, okay, that's just the nature of things. Cool. Ultimately, like, you know, my thoughts, the grand scheme of things, like, the belt doesn't really mean anything. It's, you know, it's you, you know, but...
Yeah, spoken by a man who is currently a brown belt and getting a black belt promotion in a week.
13th, I think it's... Wow, weird. It's still like kind of odd hitting on me.
Yeah. So now you could say belts don't matter.
Well, yeah. Well, all right. So for what
asshole.
It was, like, keep working, man. but as far as
black belt is just the beginning. It's when you first start learning. I'm sorry. Let's go ahead. I'm sorry.
Blue belt. I had my blue belt for a while. Like, you know, and at the time, like the
what was your longest rank?
Probably blue belt, I think.
And that's so you, at that point you just switched to balance, or were you just first introduced to balance and you
I was still a white belt when I was introduced to balance, and it was a minute there before I got my blue. And then at blue belt, like, I mean, just the group of guys, like guys who were, you know, getting their black belts now with me, guys who just recently gotten their black belts within the past year. I mean, there's just a great core group of us. But the thing was, like, we were competing a bunch, you know, so like, yeah, kind of like Lex, what you're doing now, like, I mean, whether it was, you know, local tournaments, whether it was somebody figuring out a way to get out to an IBJJF tournament, because at the time there was nothing really close on that side.
Right.
And then even just like competing in the gym, you know, like when you had like a core group of us that again came up together basically since blue belts, you know, there's, I guess, maybe eight of us in that group who constantly go back and forth any given day. Like, the matches that you got in the gym were at least as good, if not better, than the matches you get at most tournaments. And it's not like, you know, a shot at any other schools. It's just, you know, what I was lucky enough to come up with.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about some of the guys you came up with, like some of the guys that might not be around anymore for whatever reason?
Well,
do you remember?
So the guys who I came up with at balance as far as a core group, and then, I mean, I guess we can go from there, but like,
yeah, yeah.
I mean,
some of them are probably getting black belts now, right?
It's wild when you take a step back and take a look at it. Cause like, I mean, both of the Vogels, Josh, Drew, James Chiarello, Paul Wicks, Derek Lehrer, Josh Gaffney a little bit later, but Josh Gaffney basically in the same group.
Haney was there too, probably.
Well, Haney was a purple belt already by the time that I got started. So, I mean, it's a pretty crazy group of us. I apologize if I'm leaving anybody out. It's certainly not intentional. But, I mean, that was, like, the core group. And then, like, even beyond that, like, we had guys, like, who were a little bit better, you know? Like, Haney is an example. And, like, you know, guys like Tim Hart and, like, Sean Smith and, you know, all the way through. Still some of my best friends in the sport. And it was constantly having them around that really made a difference. Because Ken Promola, I have to give a big shout out to Ken Promola there, because, I mean, Ken's somebody who helped me with jiu-jitsu earlier on.
Ken was training there at that time. He was... Sorry, Charlie, we're isolating you here.
Apologies, man. We'll get you back in here on story time.
We're like curled up and listening to story time with Chris Romanchik.
Yes. There we go. Yeah. Pronounced kind of great.
I have to ask you the same, Charlie. You sort of came to jiu-jitsu in a different way. You didn't hurt your ankle. you didn't pussy out like Chris.
Yeah, I'm kind of an asshole like that.
Did you? Where did you grow up? You grew up in the area too, right?
I grew up in Chestnut Hill, and that's actually where I coach.
Awesome.
I coach a high school team in Chestnut Hill.
Oh, you born here too?
Yep.
Born, raised, stayed. Cool. And you wrestled middle school, and so Chestnut Hill is a high school only?
It's K through 12.
Oh, wow. Okay, so my knowledge, let's see if I know this correctly. Is this an all-boys school or no?
It was when I was there, yeah.
Okay. So how was the wrestling there? How was sports treated there? Like, I imagine when it's all guys and no girls, it's more competitive? Or is it less competitive? You don't have chicks to impress.
there was definitely a lot of, you know, testosterone, but
and how is it when it's all combined together? What do the practices look like?
So Chestnut Hill, it's now called Springside Chestnut Hill Academy, and just a quick history of that. Chestnut Hill Academy, CHA, was an all-boys school. It's a private school. It was founded in the 1800s, 1860-something. But there's an all-girls school down the street called Springside School, and also with a lot of history. But they just recently merged the two schools, so now it's called Springside Chestnut Hill Academy, and it's a co-ed high school. The junior school and the middle school is they're separate. Mm-hmm. So a lot of change for these two schools over the past few years.
So what you're coaching now is the high school.
So I've always coached the high school. Yeah.
And so when did you pick up wrestling? What grade?
So I wrestled all through CHA. So I started in sixth grade when it first became available. And then, you know, stuck with it through high school.
Cool. So, I mean, so you guys all wrestled together? Sixth grader wrestles with a senior in high school?
No. Separate practices. So the middle school is sixth, seventh, and eighth. And there's one junior wrestling team. And then there's a sort of a combined varsity and JV upper school team. Right. 9th through 12th.
And this is Pennsylvania. Wrestling is a... How did you guys do, in the conference? And was there a lot of pressure to...
It's a little different. So, we wrestled... So we were a private school, and so we had... And we, to this day, we have a separate state tournament. So we're not... in the postseason, we're not competing against PIAA schools, which are the public schools.
What's the competition level like?
It can get pretty high. I think it's probably pretty top heavy, you could say. So we have schools like Wyoming Seminary and, Germantown Academy, and Hartford School and Kiski School. Those are some of the top teams in the state in the independent school, private school tournament. Wyoming Seminary is, I think last year was ranked, top 10. In the country for all, public and private. So,
which is an interesting conversation unto itself, because now you start to see some of these different prep schools that are coming up, and it's
Jersey's got a couple, right?
Well, so Blair Academy is the one that comes up. Blair Academy is one of the top places you can wrestle anywhere.
It's got to be the best place, right?
It's
Blair
way
is
up there.
Number one.
But even with that, to take a step back, Wyoming Seminary was the was a ritzy seminary high school where I grew up, and and they had no wrestling team, or if they did, it was basically two guys that somehow got goaded into it somehow, and that was kind of the extent of it. I graduated, I guess, 11, coming up on 12 years ago, and none of that existed the same way, Charlie, when you're in high school, even totally different,
So the landscape has changed a bit. Blair Academy has been dominant since I've been in the sport. They win the national prep tournament, which is our postseason consists of our independent school state tournament and then the national prep tournament. Whereas if you are a PIAA school, you're trying to get to Hershey and wrestle in the PIAA states, and you have to go through districts and regionals. Hershey is where the PIAA state championships are held, both AA and AAA. But where I coach and where I went to school, we're apart from all of that. We have our own, we're trying to be state independent school state champs. We're trying to get on the podium at national preps at Lehigh every year.
And the thing with it is, now it's getting to a point where, you see these prep schools and, you talk about good wrestling, whether it's, obviously Pennsylvania or, you talk about, Jersey or Ohio, wherever they are. And, now, that prep school tournament is getting to be to the point where it's on that same level as being a state champ in any of these huge places. And it's really evident when you look at where those kids go to college. Those are the kids who are going to college and for 3 or 4 years are starting at, your Iowa schools. Those are the kids who are starting at your Ohio schools, Penn State, Lehigh, now Bloomsburg. Bloomsburg was a ridiculous party school, by the way, when I was in college, and now it's developed into a, you know, a wrestling powerhouse again. You know, or Oklahoma State, or all these other places that are huge, awesome wrestling schools, and it's amazing because the prep schools are creating like more opportunities for that stuff. But I mean, obviously, offering like a really good education in a lot of cases where it may not be there. Who cares about education here? But you know, the flip side to it being like, it's also a great way to end up, you know, having an opportunity for 4 years to, you know, work out with guys like, you know, Cale Sanderson or, you know, John Smith, or, I mean, the list goes on and on and on of great coaches in this country. So it's pretty cool that it's opened things up like that.
And you're, so at that time, and also you get to see that room as a coach now. Are you a head coach, assistant coach, head coach?
Head coach, huh?
That's something I talked to Justin Rader about. He came up in Oklahoma, as a wrestler. And he talked about, maybe, how do I describe this? I mean, he talked about he hated wrestling for a long time. He lost over and over. I mean, he started when he was like 6 years old. And he was eventually in Oklahoma. He got second in state as a senior, which is a huge accomplishment in Oklahoma. The thing is, he would go home crying a lot and, you know, just hated the experience. But his dad really pushed him into it, and he wanted to make his dad happy. And I think that story is not so uncommon. I mean, people, they really like torture you in those rooms in the best kind of way. They really push you. There's a lot of good wrestlers. And so the question I have is that's something he talked about, is the difference between that and jiu-jitsu, where a lot of his students are paying customers, and and generally
you're paying for the torture.
You're paying for the torture, but no, it's different. So he says he can't. The parents are the paying customers, so you can't quite, you know, make a kid cry, right? You can't really push him. You can't really encourage the kind of aggression. It's much more of a martial art in the sense you kind of teach discipline in a much more peaceful, friendly atmosphere, which is actually common for adults too. If you look at the way things are in balance. I cry sometimes in the bathroom, but you know, if we get tapped, but like it's pretty friendly. Mm-hmm. And that's true about a lot of gyms in jiu-jitsu across the country. When you look at gyms like wrestling gyms in the, you know, college, those are some of the most intense rooms, you know, in the dungeon. You get to experience both worlds. Which one do you think is better? are we just a bunch of pussies in the jiu-jitsu world, all friendly and hippie-like? Huh.
Right.
Are you
the hell
that?
Is everybody looking at me?
Hippie musicians.
Yeah.
Definitely different. You know, I think some kids are going to respond better to, you know, that tougher environment, and some kids are going to respond better to a little more open environment.
Do you feel like you have the freedom as a coach to push kids? If you feel like that's a kid,
yeah,
that
to a certain
benefit?
Extent, yeah.
So like as.
But you definitely need the support of, you know, the families and the school.
But I mean, if you have your eyesight,
you need the trust really from the kids in order to be able to push them. Because some kids, you know, you can tell them to run through a wall and they just won't do it. Mm-hmm. But if you build up enough trust with them, then you'll get them to work harder.
Do you find you have to have the support of the parents too? Like
it's critical. It's critical.
Ultimately, you do want the kid to go home crying, right? Sometimes.
Way to phrase that, Lax.
I mean, how do I put it? And then the parent would be supportive of that as a sign of that you need to stop your bitching and toughen up. I mean, all right, okay.
It depends.
It depends.
depends on the
Charles being all political.
Depends on the kid. It depends on the parent. I mean, no, the goal is not to make the kid cry.
No, I know. But isn't that a sign? I mean, if you want to be...
Lex was raised in Russia, by the way. Exactly. For everyone here...
I'm Russian.
Yes. His parents made him wrestle with bears on a regular basis.
Yeah, there's a YouTube video of this.
Yeah, indicative of the comments on my Facebook wall. And this was just normal for them to tie a bear to a tree and force their kids to play with the bear.
Well, I guess the question I have is, do you think if you want to be a state champion in Oklahoma, in Pennsylvania, in Iowa, do you... I mean, the story I keep hearing from a lot of these wrestlers is they get in NCAA too, like college, when they first show up to college, they keep talking about getting their ass kicked real bad. So you get used to it by the time you're in college. You know that's a sign of that you're in a good room. So that means that all you can do is improve. But it does break you in a lot of ways. And when you're a kid, you don't know any better. Everybody around you is a lot better. You're getting your ass kicked. So what is the point of sticking with it? It's hard to...
Well, that's the only way to get better is to stick with it because, I mean, for obvious reasons, if you quit, you're out of the sport. But it takes a certain kind of kid, I think, to be able to take the beatings, you know, and to be able to come back the next day with a positive attitude and just realize that it's part of the learning and to stick that out. Because if you're able to do that, then, you know, if you're a hard worker, you have a good work ethic and you keep that positive attitude and you're a sponge and, you know, you're listening to your coaches and stuff like that, then you're going to get better. It's part of the process. But a lot of kids are not willing to pay that price.
Well, see, like that's so what Justin was talking about. He wasn't willing at all either. He was forced into it essentially by his dad.
Yeah,
and then he learned what you
that learn, sounds familiar.
You know, we have competition training today at Balance. Ricardo Migliorese is running the training, and his son was, you know, he did like 4 or 5 rounds. And then he wanted to take a few rounds off. And there was that kind of, you could see like the gears turning in Rick's head.
Any of you guys who don't know Ricky, just it's an incredible visual watching like the change in facial expression.
It's a struggle for a parent. In this one case, sometimes he'll really push his son and motivate him to continue training. But here he was like, okay, I understand. Go take a shower is cool. So it's kind of it's hard to know when to what your role is as a parent, when to push a kid.
Yeah, and that's a whole other thing when you are a parent if you're a coach of your kid. You know, that's a whole other dynamic, you know, and I don't have that experience, but I've seen friends go through that and struggle with it, and it's not easy, you know.
It's an interesting topic, I think, in a bunch of different ways. Because, like, you talk about kids and, like, I mean, everybody's going to be a little bit different. Like, and from the standpoint of a kid, like, especially high school wrestling, like, holy shit, like, everything is changing around them, you know? Like, there's a little bit more to life than, and I'm not justifying shit for myself, by the way. There's a little bit more to life than sports and, like, holy shit, girls are out there and, like, you know, life happens and all these different things. From the standpoint of, like, keeping them on focus, it's a whole interesting, you know, talking point. And, like, that's one spot where, you know, I certainly have no experience coaching. You know, I certainly have no experience teaching. And that's got to be an interesting thing to kind of overcome in terms of, like, breaking down distractions. Because, like, when you start talking about, like, what it comes wrestling season, like, what it was, like, growing up, I mean, I remember friends who were wrestling all the time, like, I remember a point in high school where said Dave was basically living on a diet of tuna fish, celery, and Copenhagen and working out like probably more than anybody ever should in their right mind. And the thing was, like, he wasn't the exception. Like, he was the norm, you know. Well, a little bit of a bizarre, like, tangent on the norm, but still the norm for a lot of the people that I grew up with, you know. And, I mean, Charlie, like, you know, having kids where you've got kids who are wired differently, you know, like everybody from, like, you know, if we use like the Dave example all the way through, like somebody's flustered with everything else and everything else that starts to happen in life. Like, what kind of things do you do to help, you know, kind of keep them on track? Like, what do you do to kind of help keep that focus with them?
I mean, it's a constant challenge, I think. Kids have so much going on in their lives, like you say, you know, they're easily distracted. What I'm doing this season is I'm just trying to keep it fun for the kids, you know, so that they are looking forward to practice. I mean, there's no getting around the fact that I'm going to be pushing them and they're going to be working hard. But if I can, you know, I've learned over the years that wrestling is fun. I didn't always know that. I didn't realize that until later in life, but I'm hoping to be able to communicate that to the kids and show them how wrestling can be fun. You know, because I think it's all too easy to get caught up in the weight management part of the sport and, you know, just the grind nature of the sport and the pressure that comes from, you know, competing, pressure that might be coming from the outside, like parents. So, I mean, that's all
How bad are the weight cuts? Are a lot of the kids? What's
it's not bad.
Let's
it's,
change it's, since we were all kids.
Yeah, it's
has
it's,
it. I'm hoping.
Well, right? I think it still happens to an extent, but
I mean, kids have to register with body fat and everything else now.
But you at least know like what a good diet is, a little better understanding. I remember my coach had no fucking clue. With all due respect, Mr. Rudiger.
Mr. Rudiger fucking hates you now.
Oh, no, I mean, I'm kidding, but like
it's just more regulated. It's more regulated. So now, I had to have my when I was in high school, eons ago. I had my body fat checked when I got. We had to go through weight certification. I had we had a sports medicine doctor from Temple University come once a year, and he would take a skin fold caliper and check body fat.
Holy shit! You guys were so much better off than we were.
Yeah,
wow. but
this is impressive.
So yeah, this is what like the 40s, the 50s, something like that.
He's laughing, but he's gonna fucking kill you.
Yeah. Odds are pretty good. I'm gonna get punched in the face shortly after this podcast.
But anyway, but the difference today is that the kids have to be hydrated first. You have to pass a hydration test in order to get certified that day. What that means is you pee into a cup, and there's an instrument called a refractometer, which is it looks like a thermometer. It gets put into your cup
actually,
of urine.
Does it look at a color?
And a little peaster.
And Lex, you'll appreciate this because you might know something about specific gravity. But they test for the specific gravity of your urine, which is an indication of hydration level.
Wow.
And I think it has to be.
Is this high school wrestling?
Yeah. Yeah, this is standard.
This is an incredible change.
This is standard. So
what?
So it used to be.
I was not expecting
this. So back in my day, even though we had our fat checked, kids would dehydrate themselves, right. and you could still show up that day and have your fat checked and step on the scale, and you would get certified at a certain weight that was probably lower than you should be certified at because you were so sucked out. You wrung the water out of your system. Now you can't do that. You have to pass the hydration first before they move to the skin fold caliper test. So anyway, so that helps.
That's amazing.
That helps with the problem. The other thing with that is, so you get certified, certification just means they will say, okay, Lex, you can't go lower than 135 this season. That's,
for those of you guys who know Lex, that's hilarious and terrible.
Okay, so for Lex,
I wrestled like 112, by the way.
Lex is like 175 or something. But
yeah. So Lex grew a leg in the past.
Based
5 years.
On your body fat percentage, based on what you weigh, they'll say, okay, Lex, you can't go lower than 170, for example, mm-hmm. or maybe 160.
Yeah, something tough but reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what you wrestled?
Well,
and do you still have your high school singlet?
No, I don't have my high school singlet.
That's a lie.
Still. I do have a couple singlets, but not
your
high school singlet.
God damn it, Charlie.
Because they were school. They were school issue. I didn't get a chance to keep that.
I was half expecting to walk in here and you guys were wearing singlets. Well, I kept one packed in the car.
If you guys have seen the movie Vision Quest, I'm a high school coach now. So really.
So you basically walk around with a singlet with the polo shirt on underneath.
Which is hilarious.
And you tell your kids they can't walk the pegboard. Is that what happens?
I totally should do that sometime.
Yeah. What do you wear as a wrestling coach? I feel like you have to stick with the weird fashion of like, do you wear sweatpants and you wear them too high? And
no, what I'm doing these days is I'm tucking my sweat top into my sweat bottoms.
Of course, no, that's perfect.
Ooh, exactly. That's incredibly stylish.
That's standard.
That's
totally dorky, but that's what the Blair Academy kids do. So
well, then that's accepted. We have to follow that then, because I mean that's pretty much become
John
the new
Smith
standard.
Does,
yeah,
that's great, Gabriel.
I'm going to make an aside here. As much as we're busting on Charlie right now, he's one of the toughest purple belts I know. So before shit starts flying at me, I'm going to kind of curve it.
That's right. Keep it coming, Chris.
Yeah.
He's about to snap. So do you remember what weight class you wrestled?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So as a senior, I wrestled at 160.
Oh, wow. Okay. Do you remember how light you've ever gotten? So was a freshman?
As a freshman in high school, I was...
So you start when you're sixth grade. Do you remember what weight class?
So were you guys still like 103, I guess, would have been the minimum then still?
I was somewhere around 90 pounds as a sixth grader, I think.
And then even through college, like what did you wrestle at in college?
And as a matter of fact, I think I played football in middle school, and I was on the 90-pound team as a sixth grader. Yeah. and maybe a seventh grader, and then I was 105. So that's what I weighed. I think I was one in my eighth grade year in wrestling. I was around 112, I think.
Oh, so you
but as a freshman in high school, I was 138 pounds.
Oh, so, that's where the
little
the
growth spurt happened. Yeah. And then I worked my way up to 160 as a senior. I did wrestle in college all 4 years at William & Mary.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which doesn't have a program anymore, unfortunately. But
fuck you, Title IX.
It was a Title IX thing. But I was fortunate.
Can you explain Title IX a little bit? It's one of the things that Gable hates.
Well, I think Title IX...
Does that have to do with women? Are we going to have to go back to women?
It always comes back.
We kind of are. When
everything comes back.
God damn it. This sounds like it's such a chauvinistic podcast.
Well, Title IX is a good thing.
We've had a woman on the podcast, so just for the record.
Title IX is a good thing because it's about equal opportunity for women. The unfortunate thing is the interpretation of Title IX leads to the discontinuation of wrestling programs.
Oh, so they're going to close all the football programs as well? Is this what you're saying?
Somehow football survives.
Football, you know, like it doesn't make money, which is real weird. Like, it's a strange thing about football and basketball where it makes a shitload of money for schools.
And wrestling's not the only sport that...
there are some really oddball sports, too, that have been cut out because of it. I mean, wrestling's one of the big ones, like men's gymnastics, all sorts of oddball mm-hmm. stuff. There's a women's crew team at the University of Arizona, or Arizona State, if I'm not mistaken, which is cool because they have water someplace. It's stuff that kind of like doesn't make sense in like an interpretation.
So women in wrestling, arguably... That was one of the key problems that the IOC had with the sport of wrestling.
Right. The inequity. Gender inequity. 2004 was the first – that was the first Olympics with women wrestling. Women's wrestling has been around, you know, probably since the mid-90s.
If you look at the statistics, maybe. So we have to kind of ask ourselves. So if you look at high school wrestlers in America, there's been an explosion of female wrestlers – and that explosion has led to 2011-12 season, 8,000 women wrestled. 8,000. That's after the explosion. That's compared to 270,000 men. Guys, boys, whatever. So.
Is this high school?
High school.
Okay.
270 boys wrestled in 2011 in the United States of America compared to 8,000 women. In a philosophical way, can we ask the question, can a sport exist that has a very small minority of women that wrestle? Can the sport exist where it's not 50-50? Like, are we not promoting wrestling enough in the United States and in the world? Is that why women are not wrestling? Or is wrestling inherently not a sport? You know, it's... Women are less physical. Is that the source of the problem here, or are we just not making the wrestling rooms? Is it a boys' club, as Angie Vogel said?
Well, it has been a boys' club, but I think that's changing gradually. You know, the women just don't have a tradition in the sport, and that's probably because of society.
Right.
But that has been gradually changing, and you know those walls are coming down now, and it's more accepted these days. Although still, you know, it's more accepted for girls and women to be involved in wrestling. But there's still a lot of resistance to it.
The IOC decision has made you start talking and thinking about this with the weight classes being cut for men and added to the women. And now there's discussion that if you want wrestling to be relevant in the 21st century, that you also have to add female weight classes for Greco.
It's interesting because that very question came up. I was watching the wrestling dork that I am. I was watching when the IOC made the final vote, and you know, wrestling had to go and present to the entire IOC body, which is 120 some people. And after wrestling did this very nice presentation, and then there were some questions from the audience in the IOC, and one of the questions was Greco-Roman and women, and the question went to was handed to one of the female wrestlers on the panel, and she, as I recall, she kept her answer short and sweet, And she said something to the effect that, you know, it's just the interest is not there. So why force it?
Right.
You know, I think if there's enough demand for it, then we need to look at adding it. But right now the demand's not there. So women are, for whatever reason, I don't know. Greco-Roman is all upper body, by the way.
Right.
I think it's just a matter of like looking at it from the standpoint of like, where do you expect overnight growth? Like when I wrestled in high school, briefly as it was, like there was one girl who came out for the wrestling team. She did not make it more than like 3 weeks. Part of it was like the social side of things and the boys club mentality. And as things went there, this is going back to late 1990 somewhere. And from that to see where it's come to now is actually like pretty huge. Cause let's take a step back on this whole thing, right? Cause we can say like, why aren't there a ton of women wrestling in the Olympics? And yeah, we can take a look at that, but let's take a look at growth. Like jiu-jitsu is not an Olympic sport. May never be an Olympic sport. Who knows, right? If we take a look at what jiu-jitsu was 10 years ago, as opposed to where it is now, it's a whole other conversation. You know, like the nature of the games, the nature of the way people train, everything about it is it's expanded. And I think in so many ways, it's so much better. Wrestling's the same thing, you know. So like you talk about like your Dirty Dozen jiu-jitsu black belts, right? You know, like and everybody who belongs on like that list. Well, look at it the same way with wrestling. By 2000, there were in the teens number of American jiu-jitsu black belts. Well, look at that from the standpoint of wrestling. I graduated high school 12 years ago. I was in high school, I guess we go back as far as, what is that, 16 years? So in those 16 years, for it to go from the standpoint of one girl who tried out for our wrestling team and just didn't make it to, you know, what was the statistic you read off, Lex?
8,000. Girls,
that's ridiculous. I mean, in terms of growth,
yeah, it went from I think like 1500 2000 to 8000 in like 5 years.
Yeah, so if you really take that back to like, you know, the period that, you know, we're looking at like 10 to 15 years ago, that's a huge difference.
Yeah, at the same time, something that I don't know if it's Title IX or if like that's something Gable is fighting very hard is the huge reduction in the number of Division I schools, for example, right. Programs.
Right.
So do you think that wrestling is on the decline in general?
Well, I think – no. I think it is – there is a decline in the Division I, NCAA Division I, and that's the primary challenge right now because wrestling is growing at the high school level, boys and girls, you know, consistently. I think last year – there was a slight dip, but this year it's up again. But something like for the past 17 years or whatever, high school wrestling, or maybe it's even longer than that, high school wrestling has been increasing in terms of participation year to year.
Yeah.
Last year was an exception. But I think NCAA Division II, NCAA Division III, I think it's growing
it's
there.
Division One problem.
Yeah, it's a Division One issue. But that's where the excitement is right now. You know, in terms of scholastic style or folk style wrestling, which is different from the freestyle and Greco you see in the Olympics, the pinnacle is the NCAA Division I tournament. Mm-hmm. And it's still, I've gone for the past 4 years and it's fantastically exciting for, you know, someone like me anyway. And this, you know, the level is so high. The problem is you just have fewer, you know, programs keep getting dropped. Like Boston University, for example, is one current case. This year is their last season, supposedly, unless something miraculous happens.
And I actually looked at a map somebody posted of the highest paid people in America by state. Public employees by state. And the football coach is the highest paid in a lot of them.
Or basketball coach.
Yeah, some of them are basketball, but the majority.
Right, so those are high revenue sports. Wrestling is not in that category.
Do you see that as being like an NCAA thing, or do you see that as being like an Olympic or international thing? Because I think like we talk about like how NCAAs like influence college, but above NCAAs, you start talking about like the field of tournaments. You start talking about like, you know, the international, the Olympic side. And does it seem more like, I mean, to me it kind of does, but does it seem like everything kind of follows suit from there? Like the more prestige, the more you see going on, like the bigger things are on the international side, the more welcoming the international side, the Olympic side is, like mm-hmm. the more things grow. Like, does that seem like that's what's kind of supersedes all of it?
Do they talk about Olympics much in at the college level? Like, see, the problem with high school and college is that the rule set is completely different. Like, that's the difference you said between Russia and America is
right.
Russians wrestle freestyle
from the beginning.
From the beginning,
yeah. Right. Bubba Sirsaitiev like probably started doing like freestyle wrestling when he was like fucking 2.5 years old.
Yeah, so there's always a catch up game that the Americans have to play, because even if you have an American who is getting exposed to freestyle and or Greco-Roman at age 5. During the winter months, they're going to be doing the folk style, scholastic style, collegiate style, what have you, and not working on their freestyle and Greco-Roman. So by the time they are finished college and they're good enough where they want to continue in the sport, the next thing is to try to make the U.S. national team, which is either freestyle or Greco-Roman, and from there the world team, and from there the Olympic team. So, you know, an athlete like Jordan Burroughs, you know, had done some freestyle before he got out of college, but you know, for most of each year he had to focus on, you know, being the best collegiate wrestler he could be. So he graduated, then he had to make the switch.
Would you say some states like prepare guys for that better than others? Like I know like Pennsylvania runs like big like off season like Greco and freestyle tournaments. I think New Jersey does the same thing. Like
yeah, some colleges, that's a selling point I've heard for D1 colleges, that they also have they train their wrestlers freestyle.
Yeah, somebody like Chance Marsteller is the number one high school recruit right now, and he had given a verbal commitment to Penn State, and he recently switched, and now he has committed
to... Son of a bitch.
Pastor, like, what the hell is he doing going elsewhere, unless it's Lehigh or Bloomsburg?
Well, he committed to Oklahoma State, and my guess, I mean, you know, it's hard to go wrong there. You're either going to go be coached by Cale Sanderson, who's an Olympic champ in freestyle, plus the only four-time undefeated NCAA champ, and he's coaching a team that has won the NCAA title for the past 3 years. Or you go to John Smith, who is the head coach at Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State has probably the longest tradition of excellence in collegiate wrestling.
And they've been like runner-up.
Yeah, they're not where Penn State is right now, but they have more NCAA titles than any other school. And John Smith is who's the head coach at Oklahoma State, is our best international wrestler. He's better than Dan Gable internationally.
Also, following suit with another guy that we lost out on in college, heading out to Oklahoma State in Jordan Oliver. Jordan Oliver is another like Lehigh Valley kid. He turned into an absolute monster in the collegiate scene, and now like into the international scene. Right. So I mean,
it happens. Look at Coleman Scott. Coleman Scott is a Waynesburg, PA kid who took the Olympic bronze.
Bastards with programs in 2012, in other states. And ridiculous.
Yeah, this was before Cale Sanderson was at Penn State, and he committed. He went to Oklahoma State. Probably not a bad move. Top flight Pennsylvania high school wrestler goes to Oklahoma State to be coached by John Smith, you know, and he becomes an NCAA champ, and then he goes on to be an Olympic bronze medalist.
Pretty cool, though, I think, to see like the resurgence of just all around like Pennsylvania wrestling, you know, like coming up with Penn State being relevant for the first time since the 50s, you know, like Lehigh back to being Lehigh, you know, Bloomsburg coming out and like being, you know, something. Shit, if Lockhaven gets back to being strong again, like I'd be the happiest guy in the world, you know, or Pitt, you know. It's nice to see, like, and maybe this is just my PA pride, but it's nice to see a lot of the kids, like, you know, having opportunities here in state, you know, from the wrestling standpoint, and even like after wrestling, you know, like whether they decide to go into business, whatever the hell they decide to do, but like keeping them here because of all the attributes that you get from spending time on the mat, like, you know, whatever, but. You know, I think some of the best lessons you learn in life are, you know, lessons that you learn on the mat, be it jiu-jitsu, be it wrestling, be it whatever the case, because it's just honest. It's real, you know, and holds you accountable.
Absolutely.
So I think it's good to, like, see those guys, like, staying here in state.
Cale Sanderson, he wrestled. He's from Utah.
Yeah, he grew up absolutely middle of nowhere in the Wasatch. Mountains in Utah. Yeah.
But he wrestled.
Where did high school? Where did he go to high school?
Wasatch High School. And he was, four times.
Out by Salt Lake, middle of nowhere. It's four-time state champ. It's wonderful as far as trout fishing goes. I absolutely suggest you make a trip.
But Cale ended up going to Iowa State and was a four-time undefeated NCAA champ for Iowa State. And then he stayed on as an assistant coach and then became the head coach when Bobby Douglas stepped down. But Cale was not winning. He was getting close, but he didn't win an NCAA title after a few years of being the head coach there. So he made the switch. He came to Penn State, mm-hmm. wisely so.
Pretty good career move, I think we can say.
Good career move because he knows that, you know, Pennsylvania has such an excellent tradition of wrestling, and there are just a ton of recruits there. So, you know, he thought, I mean, I'm guessing that this is the reason he made the move, outside of the nice offer that Penn State was giving him, is that it would be a lot easier to keep kids in state.
Right.
You know, recruit
his name
kids in
can
state.
Probably pull in a lot of good
absolutely.
Kids.
Yeah.
No question.
Penn State now has three straight titles under Sanderson.
Leads me to the very depressing, dark part of the podcast.
What does this consist of?
Well, no, this is still on wrestling. I'm
discussing
kidding.
Oil checking or
I'm
some
kidding,
kind of weird yes. shit. Like where the hell are you going with this? Drags.
Let me summarize my question before I asked in a legitimate way. Summarize it by saying, why does the United States suck at wrestling? Let me see.
You
it.
Asshole. Yeah, you fucking Russian asshole.
So I looked at the top rankings in freestyle. 105 athletes, so top 15 in every weight class.
Which ranking is this?
This is September 2013.
This is FILA's ranking?
This is FILA's ranking.
All right.
Okay, now this
Those
is
Those of
not,
you watching the video not, can see not, Charlie getting hot right now. He's leaning not, forward, this is not beginning to shoot out of his chair.
This is not Olympic year, so there's a lot of guys. There's a lot of people are not skipping competitions. You look, it's just Jordan Burroughs and Brent Metcalf. At number 12.
Never mind that guy who won the last Olympics.
Jake Warner.
Oh, yeah. He's not. He's taking time. Yeah, that he's the right. guy who's taking it. Right. But the point is, it's not. And there's a few women. But besides that, it seems it's dominated by all those weird countries that nobody can pronounce. One of which I was born in.
Fucking so, Russo file.
You know, when I first saw that, I was really surprised. I guess I didn't really think about it too much. I mean, the United States still does very well, but
I think we were fifth in the third.
The medal
we were third count. In the Olympics. We were fifth, I think, in the worlds this year.
Something
in freestyle
like that. It was definitely like a top 4 to 6 finish.
And
like
Japan
it wasn't a bad showing.
Japan really the women dominate in Japan.
They do.
Well, when you start doing judo when you're like 4 years old, man, like, come on, that shit.
Yeah,
translates.
The judo rejects switch to wrestling, and then they dominate that as well.
Bastards, like.
So is my question completely ridiculous? So
yes.
Is the United States not as bad as I thought? Is the rankings indicate
those FILA rankings? I think are pretty new. In other words, I think
they're probably based just on the world championships.
I think they
totally
just,
Soviet propaganda, by the way.
Yeah, they were all in Russian. It was kind of weird.
Yeah, it was really strange. I couldn't read the same ones that Lex is talking about right now.
My point is that I think the FILA rankings need work. They're probably not all that accurate. But that said, I think you know, the Americans have a lot of work to do. Russia is number one. You know, looking at freestyle.
I'm going to take that out of context and just take that quote.
Fuck you, Lex.
But Russia, you know, is number one.
But guess what? Iran is strong right now, and Russia's down a little bit. And Iran won the world freestyle title this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Iran has 7 medals, 4 gold. Russia had 11 medals, but 3 gold. And you're talking about the world championships? Yeah.
But in the World Cup, I can tell you this. Iran, in 7 matches, 7 freestyle matches, Iran beat both Russia and the U.S. 6-1. They won 6 matches. They lost 1. So, you know, Iran's hot right now. Russia's down a little bit. Americans are on their way back up, but we're not quite there yet. Mm-hmm. For the U.S., our heyday was probably... I mean, 72 was a good year, but 92 and 96 were pretty strong too. We've been
72. Is that the Gable year?
Gable was 72.
96 was Angle. 92 was that still John Smith?
92 was John Smith and Kenny Monday. And Kevin Jackson, I think, also was 92. And then 96 was like Kendall Cross.
What year were the Schultz brothers?
84. Oh, 84 was great for America, but of course we have the boycott.
Right.
So Russia was not in that. The Soviet Union was not in there.
That doesn't count. So
yeah, kind of like how 80 doesn't count, you fucks.
So you actually went to the 2013 World Championships.
I did. I went to the Hungary. 2011 Worlds, and then I went to the 2000.
Were those?
They were in Istanbul.
Oh.
And then the 2013 Worlds in Budapest.
What was it like? What was the venue like? What were the people?
The venue was great. It was a nice, a modern venue. I wish the turnout had been better there. The turnout was better in Istanbul. Probably, I'm guessing, just because of
is Hungary not
geographically. Hungary is evidently, they're better in Greco-Roman than freestyle. Because of the geography, I think Istanbul was a more popular destination, and the turnout there was better than it was in Budapest. So you like to see you're wrestling in a 15,000 seat arena or whatever. You want to see those at the World Championships. You want to see the seats filled.
All filled.
But that was not the case at Budapest.
It's got to be cool though when you get a chance to watch wrestling, like whether it's like the Middle East or Russia, where it's just it's the national sport.
Yeah.
You know, like you start talking about things on like that level, and it's like you talk about Iran.
Right.
They care about wrestlers.
They do.
You know, I mean, that's like the national thing. Like.
Right.
You know, you talk about like, wrestlers you've previously coached with, Dave's like Kazem is an example, like different guys who are like huge wrestlers in Iran where like, that's what you do. Like, it's not like the United States where like you play baseball or basketball or football. No, you just wrestle. That's what you do. You keep going with this thing you started doing. And when you see like some of these, like national tournaments, like the big one that comes to mind is, again, like not to just keep throwing like anything at the Flow Wrestling. They do an awesome job with stuff, but like this year they made it a point to follow.
It's 12
the,
bucks a month, by the way. That Flow,
yes.
Flow Pro
only $12 a month
if you sign up for the annual member. I was
yes
sitting
the
there,
annual membership.
I was sitting wondering. I signed up for the
otherwise 20, it's $20 a month
for only $12 a month. You can learn wrestling from some of the best. Anyway, but as far as like their coverage goes, one of the cool things they've done over the course of the past year is they made it a point to like sit down and watch the Russian national tournament.
Yeah.
And like we talk about what the NCAA tournament is here. It's fucking amazing. I've had a chance to watch it once. It's incredible to see like what it breaks down to, the level of athletes, the support, like even
the attendance
in Philadelphia.
Is insane. It's like 100,000 people.
Oh,
like,
it's
where did that come from? It
gonzo.
Used to be like 15,000.
Yeah, so there's a case where like the NCAA finals, I remember they were held in Philly a few years ago and at the Wells Fargo Center, which is, I think it held 17,500 people.
Some
or whatever.
Kind of crazy
so
number,
it was,
but
it
not.
Was, it, yeah, well, I think it was 17,000 and they filled every seat for the finals.
But see, that was like back, so that was 3 years ago? Two years ago, 2011. I feel like at a certain point it exploded from like 15, 17.
2011.
That was Penn State winning that one.
Yeah, they won the
that
first
was Penn
title
State
there.
Had a big showing there. Lehigh had a big, but anyway, to like kind of like bring it around, like when you see that tournament and like that kind of show, like turnout and the people and everything else, it's pretty goddamn cool. The amount of people that come out from places like Iowa and Ohio State and like Wisconsin, middle of nowhere, so to speak, you know, it's. Like, I love it because I'm from a small place in the middle of nowhere, and to see somebody, you know, like following sports that way, it's pretty cool. And that was awesome. Now, flip side, talk about like what it was to watch like the coverage of the Russian Nationals. Number one, their top seeds were consistently like upset, you know, because wrestling is so damn deep in Russia. So when we come back to talking about like medals in Russia and why they have so many damn medals, well, it's because it's the national sport. It's what everybody does, you know? I mean, Vladimir Putin's a goddamn judo and wrestling guy. I mean, like, your whatever the hell bizarro title he takes on next week is...
Emperor.
Yes. Might as well be emperor at this point. Is a grappler, you know? That's what happens as a result of it. So, like, you see it being, like, this huge turnout where it's almost like, you know, watching it, almost like watching, like, a soccer match overseas where people break out in crazy fights, or here in Philadelphia with the old vet where, like, people get locked up underneath because
they're
assholes.
There was a crazy
assholes.
Fight at the Russian Nationals a couple of years ago, and it was all caught on film by Flow Wrestling.
But it's cool to have that kind of... I'm not encouraging ridiculous fights or gang violence, by the way. I'm going to put that out there right now. But to have, like, you know, passionate supporters and people who right. get behind it. I mean, when you talk about, like, the growth of sport, I think that that's paramount to it, you know? And the reason why Russia is so fucking good, like, year in and year out, and why, like, they consistently create monsters, everybody we can name immediately off the top of our heads right now, is because that's the case.
Well, it's something's it's supported differently, you know. Wrestling in this country is you know, although, you know, wrestling at the high school level is the sixth most popular sport, it's still, you know, it's still kind of marginalized in this country. Now you go to Iran and wrestling is, you know, wrestling, soccer and volleyball maybe are the top sports, but wrestlers are revered over there. So whereas in this country, we, you know, you pick up the newspaper and you look at the sports page, if anybody picks up the newspaper anymore, and then, you know, it's all about the professional athletes. Yeah, football, basketball, baseball. But in Iran, it's the wrestlers who are getting that coverage. And I only know this because I'm good friends with an Iranian wrestler who was exceptional in his day back in the 70s.
Who do you think was the standout, the most impressive? You're probably going to say Burroughs, aren't you? At the 2013 World Championships.
Burroughs did it with a broken ankle. Most people don't yeah. know that he actually competed with a broken ankle. But if you yeah. follow and you're dorky like we are, like... He actually did it guarding a foot, guarding an ankle. So it's a weird thing to take on.
His matches were just incredible, too. Yeah, he fought some tough dudes. Russia.
There's a Russian. His name is Gatsalov. And
what weight class, do you remember?
He's a big guy. I think 96 kilo. And he went up a weight, so he was wrestling 120 kilo, and he still won it. I mean, he's that guy is really remarkable. Multiple-time world champ. I think he might be an Olympic champ as well. But, yeah, he bumped up a weight from 96 kilo, which is 211.5 pounds, to...
For jiu-jitsu guys, like, you take this on, like, bumping up a weight class in wrestling, slightly ridiculous. Different than bumping yeah. up a weight class in jiu-jitsu.
Again... 211.5 pounds max, jumping to 264.5 max, and he still wins.
Only a 50-pound gap. I mean, that's like slight. Like,
so that was impressive to me. I mean, there were, you know.
Did you get to see Metcalf?
You know, it's funny because Metcalf wrestled on the first day, Monday, and I was a little late getting to the arena. And when I walked in, I got to see the end of Metcalf's. Metcalf only had one match. He wrestled a former world champion from Iran in the first mm-hmm. round, Takavi. And I got to see about a minute or less of Metcalf losing to Takavi. And Takavi did not make the final, so Metcalf was eliminated after one match.
Yeah, I saw an interview where Metcalf said he was really surprised that the Iranian didn't keep winning. Because mm-hmm. I feel like he lost the next match. Champ.
Yeah, might be.
Brett Metcalf's spot is kind of like a painful spot to talk about, too, because he's a guy who's on that international level where he's right there all the goddamn time. And, like, he still hasn't won it, you know? Yeah. Like, and I mean, he's – whether it's a matter of seeding, whether it's – however you want to break this down. But, like, he's had a tough run of it. And, I mean, he's always been a guy who's been yeah. big on, like, competition. Even through college, like, he had some really good guys in his weight brackets. But even like from an international standpoint, like he's no question world class. He's phenomenal. But it's just always been like whether it's seeding, whether it's like he doesn't have the best showing against somebody, but he's always right there.
So Brent Metcalf wrestled for the University of Iowa. So he's very much in the Gable.
Yeah,
the
he's
Dan Gable.
He's pretty he's much like your torch. Modern Gable. Like you're like much smaller, I like mean, 150
Dan
pound
Gable,
walking around. Dan Gable,
Tom Brands, Brent Metcalf. I mean, that's the lineage right there. And Metcalf was a, you know, he had this weird thing where he was at Virginia Tech, and Virginia Tech, he had to transfer to Iowa, and he lost a season of eligibility, so he only had three opportunities to make the NCAA, and he was a two-time national champ. you know, just fit the Iowa mold of just
grinder, man.
Grinder, just amazing work ethic and focus and, you know, just really good. But, you know, I look at him, you know, he just has not had the success on the international level that we were hoping for. You look at him and then you look at Jordan Burroughs, you know, who was a two-time NCAA champ for Nebraska and goes on to immediate success at the senior level. And Metcalf just has not been able to get it done for us. It's disappointing because, you know, because Metcalf is so good, but he hasn't been able to transfer his skills to freestyle as well as somebody like Jordan Burroughs.
And also philosophically, he follows that Gable thing that you love to see persevere and win, which is like this kind of grit.
Right.
Of like, I'm going to fucking beat down my opponent. Like, Burroughs doesn't have that. He's way too good and way too like clinical about...
It's not even just that he's clinical. It's that he's like, I mean... It's not that I'm taking away from a skill set by any stretch because he's goddamn amazing on that level, but he's also an athletic freak. So, like, you look at, like, Jordan Burroughs' explosiveness, right? Like, there are certain people where, like, you look at them and it's like, all right, he's more than arm's reach away from me. There's no way this guy's going to fucking double leg me. Like, there's no way that is like, it's physiologically impossible. And then there's a guy like Jordan Burroughs or a Kurt Angle who can actually do that shit and consistently do that shit on a regular basis on, you know, a senior level, on an international level.
That's an interesting – I never would have thought of putting Kurt Angle and Jordan Burroughs in the same.
Well, but I mean in terms of like athletic explosiveness, like it's different because you have to wrap your head around somebody who's capable of doing things that you may not be able to do. And while like I think that like – Jordan Burroughs is technically really fucking good. I think in a lot of cases, like he's aided by incredible athleticism. So it's a conversation where I think it opens up more. Like we talk about like here in the States where, you know, folks end up wrestling or playing basketball or baseball or any number of other sports that are, you know, frankly pay more money. What if those same folks ended up spending more time wrestling?
Like, they're stealing our best athletes.
Yeah, cocksuckers. You know, it's ridiculous. Like you look at guys like Roddy White. Roddy White's a guy who plays for the Atlanta Falcons this year. He's having a terrible year, and he's fucking up my fantasy football team like you couldn't believe. But the guy was a fantastic wrestler through high school. You know, you look at a lot of other guys who are on that same level, and if at the same point, like they were taking on international competition and like, you know, any of the heavier weight brackets, like that level of athleticism certainly comes out. You know,
well, there's another guy. Different. I don't know if you're like every time I see him, I'm just amazed because I've never seen him lose. Is Penn State guy? He's like heavier.
Ed Ruth.
Ed Ruth, yeah, black guy. He just like he's not like Burroughs. Well, I feel like I don't even know what's going on. He reminds me of in Jiu-Jitsu Keenan Cornelius in that he's skinny and lanky. He looks like he's not really trying. But every takedown he goes for, he gets.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't look like the Gable determination and grit where he's going to grind down and get the. He just like
it's relaxed, good technique. I mean, is what well, it's down to even, with this game. I think part of it. Cradles like watching everybody. Him, but like yeah, yeah. I mean, that's like.
But nobody seems. I don't know. I don't follow. I mean, like the wrestling forums or whatever. But he doesn't seem to excite people as much as like Kyle Dake. And I think. Or maybe that's going to change, but I think he's such a dominant force.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder why he hasn't done an Olympic.
So, yeah, Ed Ruth has done the U.S. Nationals past couple of years, and he just is not – he just hasn't broken through yet.
Okay.
I think he did better this past year than the year before, but he's just not quite at that level yet.
I saw he was suspended for something.
Yeah, DUI is what I heard.
I thought it was something more exciting. He wasn't allowed to wrestle. Yeah, because they were keeping it a secret. So I thought they were.
Yeah, he's the cover boy for Amateur Wrestling News. In this latest issue, he is on the front cover. But
oh wow,
but
okay.
That was you know, went to print before the whole DUI thing.
So Johnny Hendricks, somebody that wrestled in Oklahoma State for John Smith. And something curious, I saw in an interview that he said He said that this is something I think about a lot. He said that he when he wrestled John Smith, John Smith would always get the better of him in the practice room. So let's assume that's true. Like, why is that? Is John Smith that good, or is it? Now I hear the same thing about Gable. Guys that wrestle for him, they'll talk about that he gets the better of them whenever they wrestle. Is this like a weird worship of your of your coach, or are they really that good?
There might be something to that, but I think I mean, you're talking about two.
These are pretty iconic
two
guys.
Two exceptional American wrestlers. Gable is the kind of guy who is just gonna wear you out so that your any technique that you have doesn't work anymore. So he'll beat you down just through his conditioning. John Smith is more of a slicker type, and he is on another plane. Like, you know, less than a handful of American wrestlers, I think, are at that level. I'm beginning to put Jordan Burroughs in that same category with John Smith and Cale Sanderson.
Well, that's what Hendricks actually said, is if John Smith competed in the Olympics, the 2012 Olympics, he would do well. There's something to that.
When did Hendricks wrestle Smith? Was it recently?
Johnny Hendricks got a 2-time NCAA champ. And
he graduated early 2000s, runner right? Up,
yeah, early. So I want to say 2000.
Was
five?
That? Yeah, I was going to say. Six. That's probably
so right. 5, 6, 7. Like something like that is what he got.
You know, and as good as Hendricks was as a wrestler, I mean, John Smith was just a different level. Now, collegiately, Hendricks probably might have even done a little bit better than Smith.
I mean, Hendricks is like that classic, like, strong as shit grinder guy. I mean, like, that's a big part of his game. Like, it's so funny, like, because he would be a Dan Gable guy, like typically, you know?
So he's a Dan Gable. He was very open about the fact that he's a Dan Gable wrestler, wrestling for Oklahoma State.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I mean, like, you watch his matches, like, even you watch him fight now, like, it's the same, like, it's like, wow, Dan Gable's not that guy's coach? No, I mean, that's the thing that strikes out. Also, he has a sweet-ass beard, so I have to give props to anybody else with a sweet-ass beard.
I didn't really research this, but apparently he looked exactly like John Smith. I guess it's before he grew the beard.
Yeah, now he looks better than John Smith.
I guess you're a man who respects the beard.
Clearly.
Last question. Why do you think a lot of the D1 wrestlers, they graduate when they're 22, 23. Why don't you think we don't see them on the jiu-jitsu mat? It's very rare that we see these high-level wrestlers. They retire from wrestling, essentially. Like these really high-level wrestlers. Why don't we see them doing jiu-jitsu?
I think it's probably an exposure thing. I think a lot of guys, you know, they grow up wrestling and that's what they know, and they just keep going in that arena.
So like they're
not getting exposed to jiu-jitsu except now through mixed martial arts.
I think that becomes the big avenue, because I mean that's something that has the opportunity to pay the bills, and I think that's a big part of it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge side of it with people, you know. Like I mean, if you graduate college, like the expectation of all of us, like graduate college, get a great job, you know, life is easy, you know, like wife, picket fence, you know, 2 kids, 1.5 dogs, 2/3 of a cat, some kind of shit like that. And the thing is, like, you wrestle through college and, like, there is no NBA. There is no NFL. There is no, you know, other options. So, like, what do you look for along those lines? And, like, good college coaching opportunities, they're not exactly there. You know, like, you mentioned guys like Brands. You mentioned guys like, I mean, how long was Gable out in Iowa?
I don't know, 15 years, 20
yeah.
years.
15, 20 you know? Years.
These aren't positions that they just immediately give up. So it's not like that opportunity is there for them all the time. So like MMA is something that like, you know, comes out and makes sense. And that's why we're seeing so many like high level wrestlers in MMA, I think, which is great for that spectrum. But I also think like part of it has to do with like you graduate college, you either find a job where you're at or you move back to your hometown. And growing up in a town where still there aren't really any jiu-jitsu black belts, like Jimmy Hettis fights in the UFC, and Jimmy Hettis is my dad coaches his Pee Wee football team. Actually, you know, I've known Jimmy for years and years and years. You know, like he went in the MMA direction. There are lots of other guys who end up kind of following suit because, you know, there really isn't a whole hell of a lot there. And like you look at like the Wilkes-Barre Scranton area, there might be maybe one black belt that's up there now. I don't know who he is or anything specific about him, like, not to, like, you know, sound condescending, but, like, it's not there. And that's Scranton, 2 hours north of Philadelphia, 2 hours west of New York City. Now, we start talking about the middle of nowhere, where a whole bunch of other folks come from, and it's the same thing. Like, there is no established jiu-jitsu.
It's just not there. It's coming. Mm-hmm. I think it's coming. And, you know, I know some – I mean, the way I got into jiu-jitsu is through – you guys may remember Jesus.
Oh, yes. Jesus is a fellow who trained at Balance, by the way, for quite a long time. He's affectionately known as Jesus. He's not actually Jesus Christ. Well, depending upon how you look at Jesus Christ, he's kind of the Jesus Christ of choking people. But continue, Charlie. It's for this
the guy's name is Ryan McDermott, and he was an assistant wrestling coach under my friend Kazem Galami, the Iranian, who is the head coach at Germantown Friends School. And Ryan and I were at some wrestling practice one day at Haverford School, and he said, you know, you should think about, you know, checking out this jiu-jitsu club. So, you know, I trusted Ryan and I liked him, and so I gave it a shot and came to Balance for the first time.
But don't you think a small element of it, so maybe you can answer this, is these wrestlers are, a lot of them, there's a chance, while they're one of the best wrestlers in the United States, possibly, will get their ass kicked based on the jiu-jitsu rules, will get submitted.
Well, if you don't learn jiu-jitsu.
I mean, so the question is, do you think part of the reason why they don't do jiu-jitsu is because they have to be a white belt again? And it's been a long time since they got their ass kicked.
I don't know. I just think if you have high-level wrestlers who are still trying to make that national team or make that world or Olympic team, right, they're probably not going to branch out, you know, because they're still hungry for, you know, making that team and getting a medal for the United States.
But the ones that kind of retire.
The ones that retire, I think you're going to see more and more of those guys getting involved because, you know, because there is a lot of, you know, it's grappling.
Same thing.
And it's a new challenge. Yeah, you got to start out as a white belt and, you know, that might be some tough for some egos, but it's a new challenge that I think would excite a lot of wrestlers, you know, who have left the sport of wrestling competitively.
I hope you're right. I hope, you know, so you're an example of a guy that did that, went from wrestling to being on
fairly,
your back.
Fairly late.
It's interesting, though, too. I mean, even with, like, newer guys, like, who make that transition, like, the best example I can come up with is a guy like Lance Palmer. Like, Lance Palmer is now fighting MMA, and I remember the same year that the NCAA Nationals were here in Philly, like, him and a whole shitload of guys made their way over to Balance, and it was one of the more interesting days of training that I've ever had in my entire life. as far as the quality of jiu-jitsu, it was different, man. Like, those guys who come from a wrestling background, like, you guys have strong necks. You guys have strong backs. Like, it's a pain in the ass to break your posture. You know, like, there are a whole lot of things that like, transfer over that are just a giant pain in the ass to deal with. Like, yeah. I spent maybe half an hour on the mat with Lance, and, like, I'm not talking about how badly he embarrassed me, like, from the feet, but, like, everything on the ground, even still, like, I mean, the transfer is really good, you know? Like, so I think the thing is, like, if you take
pretty
a guy,
hard to sweep Lance Palmer, I would think.
What's that?
Pretty hard to sweep him, I would think.
Giant his pain base is probably in the ridiculous. Ass. It's the dude is everywhere and strong as shit. Like, for a guy who wrestles at 145 or 150 pounds or whatever the hell he was at last and whatever he's fighting at now, like,
he wrestled Brent Metcalf.
Oh, consistently, like, their matches were fucking incredible matches.
Yeah, so Palmer beat Metcalf. We were talking about Metcalf. Palmer beat Metcalf in the Big Ten Championships, and then that. A couple weeks later, lost to him in the finals of the NCAA tournament.
Weird story. Much like Lex, his parents also made him wrestle bears. I shit you not, there's a documentary on this. You guys should look it up and be like, what the fuck is crazy about these people? They're, like, from Russia. But yeah, using, like, guys like, you know, Brent Metcalf as an example, like, the thing is, like, that transition is there. Like, there are a lot of things that you do carry over that are incredibly strong. There are things that, like, you know, even as a, you know, quote unquote advanced jiu-jitsu practitioner, whatever the hell that means, it's even hard for us to deal with, you know? Like, the thing is, like, it's just a matter of, you know, much like everybody's kind of getting at, you know, you put the ego on the back burner and you know, like you kind of settle down to train, but there's a lot that's that kind of makes a transition.
Yep. But, you know, actually now I changed my mind. I hope they don't. I hope they stay to wrestling.
Yeah, dude, it's going to be horrible for all of us. Like, I'm not looking forward to Brent Metcalf in a gi or Lance Palmer in a gi or any of these other guys. Because, I mean, that's the case. But the thing is, like, as more schools come up, as they're, like, more local to them, as they get exposure to good training, you know, like, as they get more exposure to good guys, like, it's going to become a reality. And the thing is, like, I look at black belts when I first started, and I look at, like, black belts now, and, like, how things have changed, and, like, what it's going to be another 5, 10, 15 years from now. I'm pretty sure, like, even now, like, on the cusp of getting mine, like, I'm getting my ass kicked. You know, it's weird to say, but... yeah, like everybody just kind of constantly keeps getting better. And as soon as, like, you know, as the transition from American wrestling makes its way over, or better judo, like, it's one more thing to deal with. It's welcome. It's good. I mean, it's what makes the sport better.
Yeah. The future was with Chris Romanchik.
Yes, that's what we have here. Fuck, right. I'm done. Anymore, thanks, I'm charging you fuckers.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Lex.
Thanks for talking, Charlie. Thanks for talking.
Yep, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us out.